When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. In our NOLA Coalition segment, we are joined by Greg Rusevich, CEO of Transoceanic Development, and we appreciate same. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel. Good to hear you. Good to be on.
Greg, we most recently have had a series of, I'd say, some weird cases, a lot of mass shootings, a lot of different things happening from a postal worker being jacked up to folks outside of a popular restaurant in uptown New Orleans being arm robbed, and the list goes on. Your thoughts?
Well, Newell, our focus has been on sort of the issues that we can control and work with the community on, you know, in terms of impact of certain legislative efforts and support of law enforcement and support of the youth, which is, of course, the NOLA Coalition's mission. And one thing that we have focused on that has really caught our attention recently is in the 8th District, where many of the recent shootings have occurred. And in the 8th District, we've noticed that the law enforcement officers have been hampered, you know, the officers, because when the concealed carry, there was a concealed carry legislation that, as you know, passed some time back, back in the last session before this one, back in April. And so we've tracked gun arrest from the Metropolitan Crime Commission, our partner with NOLA Coalition, has tracked gun arrest from the August period through November of 2023, when you could not conceal carry in the French Quarter, into 2024, the same months, August through November of 2024. And what we're finding is the gun arrests have gone down significantly. There's been a 60% reduction in gun arrest. And in that period, since the, you know, in the comparative periods, and just in the month of November alone, there was an 80% decrease in gun arrest. Now, one would think, say, well, why aren't the officers making the arrests they were making before? Well, the reason is because they can no longer perform the type of proactive policing that they were performing prior to the legislation being passed, where one can now carry conceal without permits in the French Quarter. And that is hampering where the officers cannot walk up to an individual with a gun protruding or whatever and talk to them about why they have a gun and then check their records and things of that sort. So there's been a significant decrease in gun arrests. As a matter of fact, in the month of November, back in 2023, we had 50 gun arrests alone. The officers did such an exceptional job in that month. 50 in the month of November 2023. This last month, November, we had only 10. So that's really impacting, you know, and guns, people that carry guns in the French Quarter, they don't just commit shootings in the French Quarter. They then go to other parts of town, like Uptown and like New Orleans East and other parts. So this is something that we can control, Newell. We try to focus on things that we can impact and control. And this is something that we were very disappointed in the last legislative session, and something we'll be coming back on and coming back strong with the community to push again to get a French Quarter carve out to allow the officers to do their jobs, find a good common sense conservative solution to this, and then be able to take more guns off the street, which will impact crime citywide.
I have to imagine that you guys are engaged in preliminary conversations with members of the state legislature. What are you hearing? Are they receptive?
Well, they are receptive. We're talking to, you know, many of the same friends we talked to last time, and we just missed last time. But what we have now, Newell, that we didn't have before, no one knows this better than you, is we now have the facts. So before, we were just making the case, you know, the common sense case, that, look, when you allow people to just carry in basically a very dense zone, you're asking for trouble in the French Quarter. The French Quarter is basically a parade every night, or certainly every weekend. And, you know, we have, Newell, we average, New Orleans and Company gave me this number a little while ago, 200,000 to 400,000. Now imagine 200,000 to 400,000 individuals down there on any given weekend in the French Quarter. You have 15 million a year. And you then are just opening up the doors and saying, yeah, come on, carry guns, come on down to the French Quarter. I mean, it's a very dangerous, ridiculous assertion and allowance. And so anyway, I'm sorry, back to your question. We do have legislative support. We're going to make a push again. And we think now we have facts that the Metropolitan Crime Commission is putting out, along with the NOPD, to be able to back our case. You know, before we had the common sense behind it, but we didn't have the facts. Now, common sense combined with facts is a powerful combination, and I think will be very difficult to dispute.
I don't disagree. Empirical data goes a long way. Obviously, those numbers are significant, and just the whole complexion, you know, the whole way the French Quarter works, as you just articulated, the number of people there. You really want to empower your enforcement folks with the most strategies that they can avail themselves of, right, to be able to remedy or eliminate the threat. And we all know that the gun crimes down there are the threat. It's the threat to the reputation of the city. Nationally, internationally. It's one of the reasons why we have trouble luring tourists here. We're still not really hitting our 2019 marks, which is a challenge. And, you know, if you look at the Metropolitan Crime Commission website, as I know you do every week, they go back to the 2019 data. It's one of the best reported years that we had in the city of New Orleans. And, you know, in many cases we're there, and some other cases we're not. But if you do the same for the business community and the business sectors, we're not back to 2019, right?
No, I'm glad you're pointing that out, because sometimes there's a euphoria, Newell. I noted this in 2023 and 2022, and what they were doing is you know, playing with numbers and looking at like 2021 and saying, oh, you see, we're going down in crime. And I'm like, no, you have to put back to a date that makes sense. I mean, let's strive for excellence in everything we do. Striving to take a bad year and say, well, we're a little bit off above that, is not a proper way to do it if we really want to strive for a community of excellence and safety. You know, so I agree with you, Newell. I think going back to 2019 is a very good mark to be comparing to. And so I think that's absolutely right. And as far as the comment, nobody knows better than you, again, about, you know, giving law enforcement the tools. And this is exactly what's happening, Newell. We need to give them, I mean, look, we've got good things happening now. The state troopers being there, Troop NOLA has been a godsend. I mean, they have really set by example. We're very fortunate to have them here. NOPD is doing an exceptional job working with them, doing everything they can to cooperate, along with other law enforcement agencies, and not just law enforcement, but even state agencies that are down there doing sweeps. We're very grateful for all of that. But there's just one component. It makes no sense to give all of these other tools and yet take away a major tool from the toolkit, which is the, you know, obviously officers being able to provide proactive policing on gun enforcement. So anyway, we certainly, there are two things, Newell, that we're going to be pushing for. One is either a carve out again, which Senator Talbot had pushed very hard for and very diligently last time. for just simply carve out the French Quarter because of its uniqueness. There's no other place that's similar to the French Quarter, maybe in the United States, but certainly in Louisiana. And with this amount of visitors and this amount of locals coming as well, and regional individuals. So either carve it out from the legislation that was passed, or just make it a prohibited location. We already have prohibited locations that we, as you know, which include places like polling stations and schools, and interestingly enough, of course, the state capitol building. And so why not include and parades? You cannot carry on a parade route. And as I said before, this is really a parade every night, certainly every weekend in the French Quarter. So just to include the French Quarter in that prohibited location element. So it's one of those two. And we're just going to keep pushing, Newell. We're not going to go away. We've got all of the business community here that agrees, all of the civic community that agrees, the French Quarter merchants that agree, the businesses there that agree. And, you know, you would just hope that the political leadership will listen to the community here in a decentralized model. We know what's best. And the facts speak for themselves. It's a common sense conservative solution we're looking for to simply carve out the French Quarter or make it a prohibited location. It'd go a long way toward getting more guns off the street and enhance public safety.
Yeah, I mean, the way it stands now, it just adds a lot of complexity, right? As you just outlined, almost every day there's a walking parade down there, right? So there are periods of time that certain blocks of the quarter you would be carved out, but you never know when it's in, when it's out, whether it's off or whether it's on, and, you know, and it's kind of a venue in a certain extent as taken as a whole, a 20 square block area or some number right around there, that is just so diverse in what happens there from hour to hour. It makes it almost legally impossible to turn a switch on and turn a switch off. Right.
Absolutely. And that's why you want to give the officers on the ground every single possibility, every advantage you can possibly give them. They're at a disadvantage now. They've got hundreds of thousands of people coming by them, walking by. Give them every tool you can possibly give them. I mean, we've given them some more boots on the ground, some further tools, the technology tools that, of course, the NOLA Coalition has been very supportive of. Have been just exceptional down there. We've got great technology tools, both in terms of license plate readers and in terms of all types of technology that can track individuals and in a very constitutional manner, and that are really helping, and drones as well. You know, so we've got good technology down there. If you could combine that with good proactive law enforcement ongoing, then I think those are two great tools that you could really use resources and help to further reduce crime and get more guns, illegal guns off the street. Most of the guns that are, of course, being taken off, as you know, Newell, being taken off of the street and being taken off of individuals, we take those guns are then used, and most of the individuals that are carrying have criminal records, shouldn't be carrying at all. And then so we're able to make the additional arrest on those offenses. And then we take the law enforcement has taken those guns and the ballistics of the guns, and then they're tracking them to other crimes that have happened and other murders and other shootings. So you're taking that entire ability from law enforcement away to be able to track guns that were used in previous crimes and individuals who are carrying guns who are criminals, who have criminal records. I mean, this makes absolutely people, everybody keeps talking about conservative solutions and common sense. Well, this is a common sense conservative solution. Get it back on track, carve out the French Quarter or make it a prohibited location. This is a non-brainer for anybody that thinks this through. Ridiculous.
Let me pivot to something else real quick. And I know you look at these numbers. One of the things that I think is going to be interesting to see the impact going into 2025. The jail population as of November 18th was at 1,564. On the 14th of October, it was at 1,487. So we're just about an 80 inmate increase, but it has been on the uptick for multiple months now. In fact, I think when the chief came in, they were somewhere around 875 in the jail. So about a 70% increase there. We're pretty much at capacity or near or maybe even over capacity. I'm curious whether or not they've started making releases, because if that in fact is the case, it highlights what you just articulated about the French Quarter even more. Because we're going to have players that are locked up today that are going to be back out on the street. And
no, that's right.
That just puts more pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've done a lot of assessment of that of the jail population. And, you know, it's now a myth that the individuals are arrested for pot, you know, and then put in jail for long periods of time. That's just no longer existing. It takes a lot to be arrested in New Orleans these days. And the officers have done a very good job focused on individuals with violent criminal records, you know, with violent acts. And all the data shows that the vast majority of those individuals in jail are pose a danger to society. And not all. I mean, some of the individuals, we need to move those cases quicker. That's been another problem with the judges. The cases are moving too slowly. So individuals are not getting, in some cases, some small amount of cases, not getting their day in court quickly enough, and the process is not moving quickly enough. I know the MCC will be reporting on that shortly, and we're concerned about that. But there are a lot of individuals in that jail that certainly, you know, can be released and then out, which have violent, you know, and pose a danger to society. So it's an issue, and you're right to bring it up. And then it shows also that the officers are doing a good job in terms of arresting individuals. You know, we're no longer just looking the other way. We have that going for us. And that's why that jail population has picked up.
And we're heading into a real busy season right now, both with locals and tourists being downtown. We've had some crazy shootings. We've had some crazy criminal acts going on. Unfortunately, I think it's got a few folks on edge, and it's hard to argue that issue. And you don't want to see it, because as the hard work sometimes can dissipate pretty quickly when perception becomes the reality, right?
Yeah, and of course the Super Bowl is coming up. Mardi Gras is coming up. So we really need all the support we can possibly get. And you certainly do not want something major happening around those two events, which can have a major economic impact, which does affect, you know, the entire community. And look, each one of these shootings is absolutely tragic to the families. And we just need to give law enforcement every single tool we can possibly do them. They're working hard, and they're doing everything they can to protect us. We just need to give them every tool possible in the toolkit. And I want to tell you, too, Newell, that the NOLA Coalition is continuing its work on the other side of the coin, too, on the youth services side. And we continue to raise funds for really good nonprofit programs that focus on at-risk youth and youth programs. And one thing we will be focused on in 2025 particularly is how the city is expending its funding in youth services programs, the money it has, and in programs such as NORD. You know, these are taxpayer funds being expended, and we want to make very sure that we also hold city officials accountable, just as we were holding, you know, the criminal justice system accountable, NOLA Coalition, MCC, and others. I know NOLA Coalition is going to be doing the same thing with the city on its youth services side and on that NORD side. There have been some concerning reports on NORD recently. We're monitoring them, and we're going to carefully follow them, and we're going to be working to make sure that in 2025, the youth and kids of this community are served in a manner that demonstrates excellence and demonstrates care and love for our kids in the community that need it. And those are taxpayer funds, and we want to make sure that they're spent prudently and they're spent well and they're spent supporting our youth in a proper manner, so in a responsible manner and one that really helps our youth. So Those we're going to expand a bit, Newell, into making sure that the city is accountable to doing its job and serving the city fisc and making sure that the kids in the community, most importantly, at every single North playground and every single effort that's funded by the city on youth services, that those dollars are being properly expended and that that we're getting a return on our investment from our kids here that are seeking help from leadership.
Absolutely. That is music to my ears for sure. As always, we appreciate your time, your insight. Greg Rusevich, CEO of Transoceanic Development, also very active with the Metropolitan Crime Commission, NOLA Coalition, and other organizations, always giving back to the community, and we appreciate the same. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a happy holiday season.
Thank you, Newell. Merry Christmas.
Same to you, my friend. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Klaus Sadlier, founder and lead curator of the New Orleans Storyville Museum. It is a museum that kind of talks about the history of New Orleans, America's original Sin City, and its notorious red light district right there in Storyville. Klaus, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, Noel.
So, Klaus, how long has the museum been open?
So we've been been open 3 months. We actually opened on Labor Day, and it's just having fantastic feedback and getting fabulous reviews. And we continue to add to the experience.
So, what is the New Orleans Storyville Museum?
So really, it's a museum that it's very interactive, and it showcases and explores the colorful history of New Orleans from the very founding in 1718, and takes guests all the way through the Storyville period, which ended in 1917 at World War I. And it really explores how New Orleans was such an influential city. At one point in time, we were the third largest city in America. We had the fourth largest port in the world in the middle 1800s. Such a cultural rich city, and it details that as it takes them on a journey up through Storyville and kind of talks about the colorful side of the history. So it's really about how, for example, we were the gambling capital of America in the 1800s. Also, a lot of people don't know craps was invented in New Orleans. Poker was invented in New Orleans. Of course, jazz music was very important because Storyville really gave jazz, I call it sort of an incubator and an accelerator, because jazz was starting right around that period. And Storyville gave so many musicians an opportunity to play. And then, of course, when it closed, all the musicians went around the rest of the country and really spread jazz throughout the world.
Yeah. So it's located in the French Quarter at 1010 Conti Street. Is there something historic or unique about 1010 Conti?
Well, what's unique about that is actually before Storyville, that area of the French Quarter was steeped in vice. So that area was kind of a red light district, not an officially sanctioned one. But the whole purpose of Storyville was to take vice out of all the neighborhoods in New Orleans and try to put it in an area that could be controlled. It was never legalized, but it was basically it was pseudo legal. They made a district, Storyville, in which they weren't going to arrest people for practicing prostitution. And so they cleaned up the French Quarter, they cleaned up the other areas, and they put it in Storyville. And the museum itself is actually just one block from the from Basin Street, which was the main corridor for Storyville.
So if we visit there, what would we see?
So you would start with start in the 1700s. Every room is curated to take you through a different period of time. So the first room, for example, is really about the founding of New Orleans. So we talk about how Bienville settled New Orleans and the first basically settlers that came in to build the city. And then we talk about the Louisiana Purchase and how that really opened up New Orleans as a basically a major port city, and how the Battle of New Orleans really brought sort of the first wave of settlers American settlers to New Orleans. And then, for example, the next room would talk about the 1800s. And that's really the growth period. They're really kind of an exciting time in New Orleans, where we had so many Europeans coming in because of the river trade, as well as other parts of America. And that, for example, we have interactive exhibits of a saloon. We have interactive exhibits of we talk about the history of the red light. And it's just really, really immersive in each section of the museum. And then you move on to the late 1800s, the early 1900s, and we culminate with a sort of a walking tour of Storyville, because, of course, Storyville was torn down in the 1930s to create the Iberville public housing. And so there's really no structure. There's only three structures that remain, but it was an amazing architecturally important area on Basin Street. So we sort of reconstructed what we could, so you actually get a taste of what it feels like to have walked down Basin Street back in, say, like 1910.
So Storyville would have consumed like how many city blocks back then?
It was approximately 15 city blocks. So
oh,
it started
wow.
On base. Yeah, quite large. It was the largest red light district in America at the time. So it started at Basin Street from Canal to St. Louis, the St. Louis Cemetery. Well, actually Iberville, but let's just say Canal. And then it went all the way back to Claiborne. So it was that entire area. And it was at its peak, it had 400 houses of prostitution, 36 saloons. Interestingly, it had actually three indoor shooting ranges, which had two churches and, of course, one cemetery. So it was quite a large area.
Pretty diverse.
Yeah.
So, Klaus, so this was kind of your brain trust? I mean, you brought this to fruition. What was the motivation for you?
I'm a lifelong New Orleanian. Of course, we hear about Storyville. You know, it's in mm-hmm. it's in pop culture. There's been a number of movies that did it. The latest Interview with a Vampire series was set in Storyville. And it just always surprised me that there was no museum to talk about it, because it's not just about, it's not just about the Red Light District. It was so influential. And again, like we talked about, the establishment of jazz. And it was sort of the first sort of quasi-legal area where they really made an attempt to kind of clean up vice and put it there. So it was kind of a case study. And there's so many interesting things that went into it before Storyville and of course, during Storyville, that I thought it just really needed a dedicated, very large museum that could tell locals as well as tourists about the story of New Orleans. And I kind of use it as a platform to talk about the fact that we were such a diverse, culturally rich, economically powerful city in the 1800s. I think that sort of gets lost these days.
So Brother Martin grad, a UNO grad, so educated here, you went out to the West Coast and you invented some really interesting things. The world's first insulated paper coffee cup. That's you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like people, it's one of those things. I think I've my track record is always kind of inventing the things that people say, why didn't I think of that? And the Storyville Museum is another example. People say, well, why didn't somebody do this before? But yeah, right. The insulated cup, I like to say I was in the right place at the right time with that. It was the early 90s in San Francisco, which was kind of the forefront of the environmental movement to go from styrofoam to paper. And came up with the idea, patented, and fortunately I was in a land where there was a lot of capital available. New Orleans is a great place, but I have to say that I probably would not have been able to raise the amount of money I did if I was in New Orleans at the time. So I was fortunate enough to have done that, built it and sold it to the Dixie Cup almost 20 years ago. And and was able to actually, that gave me the freedom to do this.
And then you went back in the lab and invented the flexible Tupperware top. And that's the top that actually flexes, right?
Yeah.
That we still see it today. right?
Yes, yeah, it's in Target and Walmart stores, yeah.
You didn't invent the broom, did you?
No, that was before my time.
Maybe right there in Storyville. You know, who knows?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So, and then you sold that and returned here to the city 2013 and became a resident of the French Quarter, which had to really pique the interest in what you're doing here. And we're so thankful that you did, that you've accomplished it.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't want to live in. I've been fortunate enough to travel around the world, and I have to say New Orleans is just where my heart is. It's a fantastic city. And French Quarter, I feel, is the center of that universe.
I've got a text here that says the 1947 film in New Orleans featuring Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday ends with the Shore Patrol coming in and closing down Storyville. Is there any truth to that?
So, what happened was that in 1917, America entered World War I. And they basically had the Army and the Navy both had large bases here. And particularly the Navy had an edict that did not allow any base to be within a reasonable distance of a red light district. And I think at that time they were saying that it changes, but at the time it was 5 miles. And of course they were right here on the river. So they told Mayor Martin Berman he needed to shut it down. And it was interesting because he went up to Washington and lobbied to say, no, look, we actually are able to control it. It's within this district. We can keep the servicemen out. But what he didn't tell them was that they actually had all these little pop-up places where the servicemen would go in and rent civilian clothes. And they would go into Storyville for the night. And then they would go back and change and go back to the base. Yeah. So they weren't really fooling anyone. So finally, they said, listen, if you don't close it down, we're going to close it down for you. And so there's this famous quote that he makes as he's submitting the ordinance to the city council. And he says, well, you can make prostitution illegal, but you're not going to make it unpopular. And then with that, they basically signed the ordinance that shut it down. And, of course, it didn't go away. It just went back into the neighborhoods where it was before.
Right, right. Was there ever an attempt to bring it back?
Not to my knowledge. There was also society was changing sort of at the time, too. And, of course, you had Prohibition that started a couple of years later. So there was just the reformers really kind of had the upper hand at this point. And I think, once it kind of started declining and then, there was never a movement to bring it back.
Right. So how can folks enjoy what are the details about visiting the Storyville Museum?
So they can look us up on the internet at NewOrleansStoryvilleMuseum.com. But we're open Thursday through Monday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's $31.50 to enter, but we do have a $10 local discount anytime. So all you have to do is show us that you're a local, and we'll give you the $10 discount. And then people be prepared to spend at least 1 to 2 hours here. Our average customer spends probably an hour and a half to go through all the rooms. It's 7,000 square feet, so it's quite large, quite interactive.
And I see here you must be 18 to enter, so I have to imagine there's some risque-ness there.
Well, there's nothing visually offensive. Much less than you would see in the Vatican Museum.
Well, I didn't say it was offensive. I'm just saying it was risque.
Yeah, no, exactly. But the subject matter is obviously mature,
right?
So it's an adult subject matter, and we don't want to really be the people to have to tell. We don't want minors to learn that from us at first. So yeah, it's 18 and over.
Well, Klaus, you have a very interesting history. You go to Brother Martin, go to UNO, you leave, you go invent two things that are still in existence today. I guess it's okay for me to say you made a boatload of money. You come back to the city and then you open this museum and we're better for it. I just want to say congratulations to you. I won't hold the fact that you went to Brother Martin against you as a Blue Jay, but it's okay. I can get over that. But, you know, and we're better for it if I have in the New Orleans Storyville Museum right there at 1010 Conti. Folks, you're going to want to check this out. We're going to get by there, my wife and I, real soon. I got to see this. I had no idea that this even opened. I'm so very excited that it did. I think others should
be as well. Love to give you a personal tour.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Klaus Sadler, founder and lead curator of the New Orleans Storyville Museum. Best of luck to you and happy holidays.
Thank you, Nolan. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. And that website is NewOrleansStoryvilleMuseum.com. A number of people have asked for that. It's at 1010 Conti Street. I was looking at the reviews last evening. Everyone seemed to really enjoy the history. They said the layout is actually perfect. It makes sense, and they truly enjoyed it. And quite a few people said they were there for at least 2 hours. So there must be a lot to see and listen to and hear about there at the New Orleans Storyville Museum. You know, just another example of our city, how great it is. I mean, I say this all the time. We succeed in spite of ourselves a lot of times. You know, if you listen to my first hour talking about just this breakdown in governance and everything else, and then you got a story like Klaus Sadler, who, you know, goes to Brother Martin, goes to UNO, goes out to the West Coast, invents the insulated paper cup, right? I mean, hadn't everybody dreamed of inventing that little niche item that you're going to have each and every day? And then the flexible top, you know, for Tupperware. Really? And then comes home and opens a museum that I think is probably going to be a big hit when you look at the reviews of this. And it just been open 3 months. And check it out right there at 1010 Conti Street. And, folks, I am going to be at the Metropolitan Health Group in Metairie on Transcontinental. I think it's 4454 Transcontinental Drive. We'll be accepting packaged food goods and donations for Second Harvest Food Bank. Stop by, say hi, make a donation. Even tour Metropolitan Health Group's state-of-the-art facility. Let's make sure that no child, senior, or neighbor goes hungry at Christmas. So meet me out there. We'll be out there from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Help us to harvest hope for the holidays on WWL. And also a chance to win tickets to the Saints' final home game against Las Vegas on Sunday, December 29th in the Caesars Superdome. You can score two premium tickets to the game, plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group, Open Bar, Premium Liquor, All-You-Can-Eat Buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May, all overlooking Champion Square. Winning's easy. Just go to WWL.com/contest and enter for your chance to win tickets to the Saints' battle with Las Vegas from Dudley DeBosier, our official injury lawyers of the Saints and WWL. And a reminder, the Saints play Monday night at Packers Stadium, right, in Green Bay, 7:15 start time. So we got the whole weekend free to do a whole host of things. And it's supposed to be a little chilly leading up into Christmas. So that ought to be nice as well. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. This is WWL. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Tiger Joyce, president of the American Tort Reform Association. They did a recent report that identifies Louisiana as one of the top judicial hellholes in the United States. In fact, we rank 10th. We'll gain a better understanding as to what data they are looking at in order to support that ranking of the way that we conduct business in our courts in the state of Louisiana. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.